Welcome to Day Zero Update for November 3rd, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jenner Victoria.
And yeah, it is finally November.
Mm-hmm.
For all the good and bad that is.
Yeah.
Still warm out.
Mm-hmm.
How November should be, at least here in Ohio.
Mm.
Like we're going to hit 70 tomorrow, which is not what you think of leading up to Thanksgiving. But hey, there we are. Got some games to talk about. A couple things that came out this week, particularly from Nintendo, that you may not have expected. We got some news on some things coming out in the near future. A few games you'll be able to check out over the next couple of months. And yeah, Nintendo announced another game coming to the Switch, not the successor to the Switch,
mm-hmm.
which is annoying certain kinds of people on the internet. And yeah, then we got a couple games that are coming out next year, as well as some unfortunate industry news. But before we get to that stuff, we'll kick it off here with the games we've been playing. And I will kick it off with my own games. Particularly, I've been playing a good bit of Vampire Survivors and their new Ode to Castlevania DLC. That is, I think it might be their most expensive DLC to date. But keep in mind that that is for Vampire Survivors way of pricing stuff. Because that is a $5 game. I believe the DLC is $3.99. Trying to look at what their other DLC has been priced.
Yeah.
Operation Guns, the Contra mm-hmm. DLC is $2.49. Then I think all the others are $1.99. Emergency Meeting, Tides of the Foscari are all, or no, Emergency Meeting is $1.99. Then the two sort of original ones, Tides of the Foscari and Legend of the Legacy of the Moonspell, are $1.59. So, or no, those are $1.99. Oh, because everything's on sale because this new DLC came out. Okay, I'm reading the wrong price. $2.49 for the Contra and Among Us DLC. And this one is their biggest yet. Trying to look at what the numbers they put out on this. 20 plus new characters. I have unlocked a handful of them at the moment. Mostly Belmonts, but I just unlocked Alucard, which I am going to guess is the closest they get to a vampire in this game. A half vampire character. 40 new weapons, a bunch of different types of weapons. I have mostly gotten whips since I've mostly had Belmonts so far that I've been working with, trying to unlock their stuff. And yeah, these don't really seem to require too much in the way of weird things to do for evolving them and unlocking them. Mostly been some very basic, the persistent items, or the whatever they're called, the secondary items that you need for evolving them. And then yeah, the new map is a very large map, of one that through the course of the different runs I've done, I've only gotten close to the end of it once, and that's mostly running through it directly. There is I feel like they use a lot of elements from the Symphony of the Nights map.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that keyhole kind of fast travel system is in here. And so that means that you run into one of them and you just rotate to the next one and then have to run back out and back in to go to the next one. I think there's three spots for that. That can get you fairly far across the map. But there's a lot of different areas throughout, covering the gamut of, you know, the sort of places you would expect, with, you know, a library section, a bunch of, like, underground crypt setting kind of thing. There's been some areas I haven't gotten to yet, because some of the doors are locked behind boss battles, which they'll have glyphs on the ground to spawn most of these bosses. There's some that are just the ones that spawn a big ring of usually plant like enemies that block you into this area, and then have a boss kind of hanging around in there as you try to take them out. Which at the point that I am at of unlocking stuff is not too hard. And of course you get bats and such, and they use a lot of sprites from Symphony of the Night. So that means you got new bat sprites and, you know, new versions of a lot of the sprites that they essentially created distinct versions of for the base game of Vampire Survivors, since that is a game that was made to emulate the style of Castlevania, but be as legally distinct as they could. But they do some really cool stuff in the map where there is, there's a bunch of like hidden areas, but if you know the part of Symphony of the Night's map where you fight your doppelganger,
mm-hmm.
When you go to that area, it switches from a top-down view in style of control to a side-scrolling view and style of control. Camera-wise, it's not much of a change, but you see it when you do the switch between them. But in controls, it mainly means that you have to push up on the D-pad or the analog stick, whatever you're using for it. And so that's kind of a bit tricky. And that fight is required for unlocking Alucard. I had to beat that with Trevor Belmont. And yeah, the evolutions of the weapons I've had so far are pretty cool. The whips usually get some extra like animation to them. The first one you get is kind of a very basic strikes, I think, essentially like to your east and then like northeast. It's like a two basic slashes it does. When it levels up or when it evolves, it gets three, essentially just the east, northeast, then north. And then it has, I think all the whips have some sort of special thing it does every so often that it's it activates, which for one of them, I forget which Belmont it's attached to, but it spawns like a water dragon out of it that goes and attacks enemies in a certain direction, that kind of stuff. And then I think it causes rain every so often. It does extra damage to all the enemies around you. Another one, you use fireballs all around you. That is really cool. I forget what the third one does. But there's like a shuriken that I believe you can get now. And there's a curved blade that has some nice stuff to it. And what else? There's a discus weapon here that kind of rides along walls, I'm guessing, to get enemies that are clipping through the walls or running along the walls, I guess. Something like that. But yeah, it's a very cool DLC. It's got a lot of content to it. The music is fantastic, so you have to listen to, I think they say, like 30 some songs from Castlevania, which are all just really good and probably better than any of the ones that were in the base game for Vampire Survivors. But yeah, I'm still working my way through unlocking characters and items and such, but yeah, still enjoying this a lot and looking forward to unlocking more. So yeah, that's Ode to Castlevania, DLC for Vampire Survivors. I would say maybe it's some of the coolest DLC I've seen in a while. A lot of the tricks it does for adding in the making the Castlevania stuff work pretty well is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
For what I've done here. So yeah, there's that. The other game I've been playing is Unknown 9 Awakening. I got this in from Gamefly because I wanted to kind of see what this game was, especially because it's gotten like decent reviews, like sixes and sevens, I think. Like five, sixes and sevens. So I was like, okay, what kind of game is this that seems to be getting pretty decent reviews, but nothing really saying it's all that good. So I've played a couple hours of this. I can definitely see why it is not a high budget game in terms of the visual quality or anything. It kind of feels like a a very like late PS3, early PS4 kind of level of visual quality to it. I had a number of times where it seemed like there were visual effects that I wasn't sure were actually part of the game or just bugs or something. And the as for the gameplay itself, it's kind of a very basic action adventure stealth game, I guess I would say, with a little bit of platforming, but it's not really, it's more Uncharted style wall climbing, I would say. Or maybe more like Tomb Raider style platforming, like the reboot trilogy of climbing up walls and that kind of stuff. There's no real fail to the jumping across gaps type of stuff. You just hit the button when you're on the edge and it'll jump over to the gap safely. So there's no real challenge to that stuff, but the stealth seems like the main way of doing things. And it has, I would say maybe sort of take on, say, Star Wars Jedi style of stealth here, where you're, the first like thing they show you is this kind of like force push kind of move, which you can push enemies into explosive tanks, and it'll set off the tank and kill them in the process. If they hang around and as they die, they may alert other enemies around to come out and check out what's going on. And at least this has like the depth and the stealth enough that they can notice enemies that are dead, that their fellow people are dead, that kind of stuff, and be alerted. I think that's something I've played something fairly recently that I don't think did any of that in a way that was disappointing. But here, that stuff kind of works. The interesting mechanic they have here is a maneuver called stepping, which lets you possess the body of an enemy, and then you get to do like an attack or something to either destroy some sort of machine or whatever you need to do, or start attacking enemies. And so, yeah, that's a pretty cool ability that they have. It's not really all that useful because the enemies, I feel like so far, don't do that much damage to their fellow enemies when I've done it. So that's kind of a bit of a disappointing aspect of it. But there is a skill tree. As you find a certain type of collectible, you get points to put into your skill tree. And I've upgraded at least this way that it has like a detective vision kind of thing to see enemies around you more easily, which they have like a cool name for it. But I think it's called the Fold. You essentially portray this like vision over the screen, over a chunk of the screen to see through objects, and it sort of highlights enemies in blue, and explosives or collectibles in like an orange or a yellow kind of thing. And you can upgrade that to see further and keep the highlight on enemies and collectibles and such for longer, which helps out. But yeah, a lot of the collectibles, I don't know if there's some reward for getting all of them, but they have just tons of collectibles so far. A lot of it just being random pieces of lore or, you know, letters or something like that. That the little bits I've read haven't been all that interesting. But yeah, they portray this as like a kind of futuristic kind of world, though it is set in like the early 1900s. I think the intro starts at like 1908, and you play as an Indian woman who is played by the actress that played Yennefer in the Witcher series. I mean the Netflix series, not the games, but she is being sort of led around by her mentor, a woman named Rekha, I believe. And sort of reminded about, you know, the different abilities and such that they have. And through that whole intro sequence, you're kind of getting your tutorial and all that. and kind of checking out the combat and all that. And frequently she would get stuck in different ways, stuck on like physical objects and in tents that we were walking through. That was like, oh, this game's just not very well polished or wasn't funded to catch all these kind of bugs that are relatively minor, because I think the character will just despawn and respawn somewhere else and catch up to you more easily. So it's not really anything that ruins it. It's just sort of like, oh, okay, so this just wasn't a high budget game, wasn't, you know, maybe given the time to iron out everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of just makes it seem like, okay, I see what's going on here. And yeah, at the end of that first chapter, your mentor character gets killed, sacrificing herself for your ability to keep going. And the leader of the bad guys is this white guy who has sort of found this technology supposedly that will save the world or whatever it is. It wasn't even that interesting to really pay that much attention to it. And then it fast forwards like 4 years later. So I think it's 1912. Your character sort of is back in a town, doing some dirty work, and sort of runs into the like government establishment, kind of hounding a friend of hers at a bar. It's running the bar, I guess, and in the process, you use your abilities to take them down and stop the harassment.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, you put yourself on the map for them to come looking for you. Mm. And so you're kind of semi-exploring this town, but working your way towards a dock to get out and go wherever it is you're going. I was in the process of getting out there, but taking out enemies here and there. But yeah, kind of just doing that, you kind of see the flaws in some of the AI for enemies, where they frequently get stuck on things and or maybe get stuck in a way that you can just walk up behind them and take them out pretty easily. I do think one of the cooler things is that the like stealth takedown, it looks like you're ripping the soul out of their body and then destroying it. Just the way that you're kind of pulling out their being or whatever it is, like a version of their soul themselves, like a digital version, just like throwing it away is like a really cool way. Then you see the body just kind of plump over and not even like ragdoll or anything, just maybe lay down in a random animation that it stops in. And you're just like, oh yeah, this is a low budget game. It's $49.99 full price. I don't say it's been fine so far, but it's not anything that I kind of want to keep going. Like the story hasn't been that interesting so far, or the gameplay hasn't been that interesting, or anything like that. And yeah, it's just one of those games where it's like, it's fine. Maybe for $20 might be worth checking out to play through it in a year or two, because being a Bandai Namco game, it'll get to that kind of price fairly soonish. Sometime next year, maybe next summer, that might be a game to check out if you want something pretty simple for what it is. But yeah. Yeah, the combat's all right. I didn't even think much about it because it was that kind of non-interesting. They have a lot of like elements of it for dodging and all that. I found kind of the most effective way is just kind of force pushing the enemies over constantly, and then when just running up to them and just start wailing on them, and then when they start blocking you, run away again, then push them over, just kind of re-engaging them. But I do suspect that they'll have abilities at a certain point to kind of stop you from stepping into enemies to do things. They kind of hint at that in the intro chapter. But yeah, it's very basic combat and the kind of thing where it's like, I'll just try and stick in the stealth as long as I can. Just to avoid getting into the combat, but maybe they'll make some improvements, but I don't think so. For probably what I would expect for post launch support. So yeah, that's Unknown 9 Awakening. It's pretty okay, but if you're in the mood for that kind of very kind of mid game, that's one you can check out. Hopefully at a good discount. Because I don't think your $50 is better spent on other stuff at this point right now. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, finished Dead Space last night, and I'm talking about the remake. And yeah, that game really picks up the pace just about at the point when you think, yeah, I'm not so sure I want to keep doing this. The thing is, one of the things about this game that really like separates it from the original is the fact that so much of it is basically completely dark. So you're literally having to navigate using, you know, the flashlight of like whatever weapon you're using at any given time. And also on top of that, you are, you know, there's a degree of unpredictability to it to a certain degree. When you get to a point in the game that you're starting to have to like backtrack and do some stuff, the game will like randomly drop like enemies at you without you expecting it. And a lot of them can do it like very quietly too. You'll just be walking around and then suddenly you'll see them sneaking up behind you. It is surprisingly it's surprisingly unpredictable and unnerving for the what I originally expected was going to be. Don't keep in mind, I played the original Dead Space more than a few times back in the day, and I also played the sequel. But compared to that, this game is a lot more unpredictable. And it's also, honestly, a lot more fun, too. The controls compared to the original feel a lot tighter and a lot easier to use. I will also say, though, that one of the things about this game is the ammo in this game is definitely a commodity, so save it while you can, because you never know when you're going to need it. Especially when you remember that even the most basic enemies are going to require, you know, like three or more shots to take down. But yeah, I finished that, and I mean, that game was pretty much a shot-for-shot remake of the original. And, you know, ends basically the way the original does. And I'm hoping they're, you know, at work on making, you know, the second, you know, making the remake of the second game, because as good as the first game was, the second game basically knocks it out of the park. But on top of all that, I've also been playing some other more random stuff, like Tearaway Unfolded, which is, as you don't remember, Tearaway was like this charming little PS Vita game that was put out by Media Molecule, you know, the same people behind, you know, Little Big Planet and Dreams, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, if you play a Media Molecule game, you kind of know what you're in for. It's going to be a charming little game that's going to be loaded with sort of a nostalgic sort of arts and crafts aesthetic to it. And that's definitely the case with Tearaway. It's basically loaded with, you know, paper craft and all that. And basic plot is you're a living envelope, and you're trying to guide that living envelope to that has a message inside of it to the person who the message is written for. And that's basically it. You're going around this little papercraft world trying to make your way to the entrance cell, let you go out into the outside world to deliver it. And the game, you know, like, is also pretty common with Media Molecule games. It's basically trying to get you to use as many parts of the DualSense controller as possible. You're using like a little spotlight that is emitted from it to like shine on things to like restore the world to its former beauty, and make activating things as well. If you come across like these little, because you can't jump in this game, but you do still have to like hop around, you use these sort of like trampoline drums, and you have to like tap on the the mouse space in the middle of the controller to get up to jump up and everything, and all kinds of stuff like that. And it's just, it's a fun, charming little game. You know, it's fun. And on top of that, I'm also, I've been pecking away at this little cult classic called Rain World, which is a very dreary little game where you're playing this sort of odd kind of cat otter type thing, trying to navigate around this like industrial wasteland where you're trying to not only, you know, keep food to survive so you can hibernate on occasion, but also exploring, trying to keep away from predators, you know, solving puzzles, stuff like that. And it's one of those games where it feels like there's just a bunch of stuff around you and you're never really sure where you're going to end up. I'm not saying it's like randomly generated or anything, but it's designed in such a way that it makes you feel like you're in the middle of this incredibly vast landscape and you really don't know what you're going to end up seeing when you go from one section to the other. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, my gameplay has been entirely Metaphor Refantasio.
It's that kind of game.
Oh, yeah. I am around 40 hours in now. I've gotten to a point where I'm at that island with that race of the people with the three eyes.
Stuff. Yeah, the I forgot what they're called, but Yuffa, the priestess.
Yeah, yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Something like that. And, yeah, you know, I mentioned in the past that this game is pretty hard. And, you know, I've gotten to a point where I've gotten confident and all of a sudden it's slapping my face again. It's now, you know, I'm a hardcore Persona player. And like, if you play it with the same mentality of Persona, like you'll have some success, especially early on. But like, you know, if you get like impatient with all your archetypes, then yeah, it leads to a certain downfall. I am at a point where I'm realizing that, you know, once you maximize your archetypes to level 20, it'll go ahead and unlock the next class. But that also doesn't mean that next class is better. In fact, they could be worse. And I'm like, oh, great, I am being humbled real quick. Because, like, you know, you can all of a sudden, you can update your mage to a wizard. And, like, yeah, a lot of the stats go up. But you also lose all of the attacks that, you know, that came with it. And you have the ability to bring some back, but at the same time, it's like they have different strengths and weaknesses now, and you have to take them into account.
Yeah,
I am at a point where I went to the what is it, the Dragon Tower, that dungeon, and no, before that. So when I first arrived at this island, I went ahead and took on a side quest, and you know, I talked about the side quest, I talk about how I handle these side quests, basically, especially when it involves the side quests where you have to go to a certain area and kill a certain boss. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and skip all these enemies and run straight up to the top and go ahead.
Yeah,
and kill
don't do that. Don't.
And
do
I was
that.
Like, oh, this guy totally whooped my ass. No matter how much I ended up like wasting 2 days to get to that dungeon in the first place, only to come back and find out if I actually focused on the main quest a little bit, you know, things would turn out a little bit better. The girl that I unlocked, you know, gave me another quest to kill this other bird, which gave me another potion item to get this tree out of the way to unlock my way into the real dungeon. And it turns out the real dungeon had another side quest tied to it that I can go ahead and do. And yeah, I attacked this dungeon the exact same way. Like, go ahead and avoid the monsters if I can, and then go ahead and get to the top, which I had better success with, because apparently, I guess the side quest I tried to do at first was just way beyond what I had to do in the initial main quest to begin with. So yeah, like, like, if I were to give anybody advice with this game, like, just play it. Don't worry too much about the side quests and getting buff, because sometimes the main quest will get you buff for the side quests. And keep in mind of the deadlines that they have. And honestly, like, the deadlines aren't even too bad. Like, if you see something that's like 8 days from now, it seems like that's not a whole lot of time. But at the same time, it's like, if you're doing a side quest that wants to take a day to do, you will be all right there. But yeah.
Also, keep in mind that, you know, you're the gauntlet runner that you have has a teleportation feature that can basically instantly return you to basically any of the major hub areas you've gotten to at that point. So you know, you can factor
that. If you've been to in the past, you can go ahead and warp back to them, which also helps with the the fetch quest, side quests, and that's also been rather useful.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I've gotten to a point where I'm just wondering which archetypes to properly use. There was one point where my main guy, Will, his name is, he had like these awesome attacks. Like he has like upgraded fire attacks, but I was hitting like 15 damage. And I realized it was because, oh, I didn't have like the best weapon equipped onto him. So it's like, yeah, keep in mind your entire loadout and things like that. And like now that I have five people in my party, I also have to keep in mind like who's not in it. And that also makes it important to go ahead and raise your they're called social links in Persona. I forget what they call them in Metaphor, but if you raise people to a certain level, they'll eventually gain the same amount of experience if they're not in battle anyway. So like something to keep in mind. And definitely having a lot of fun here. It's definitely been an excruciating time, but at the same time, like it's been very fair so far. The only time where it's not fair to me is when I go against these. It doesn't matter if they're bosses or regular enemies, but they have like this howl move that allows them to get four more turns, and I'm like, okay, like I felt good about
Yeah, the
this
soul
field
scream.
energy.
Buckle up because basically every boss has that.
And it's ridiculous. Like no matter how strategic you are, like there's no way like you can really combat that because it's gonna happen. And like the cool thing about this game is when you press the left stick during your turn, you can start over again. And like you'll know what they're weak against, so you can go ahead and switch up your strategy that way. And there was one point where I did that, and then so when I started over, the enemies attacked first, but for some stupid reason, they used like the worst attacks possible for them, and I was like, okay, I was able to one-shot them with this. And a lot of luck involved. I'm pretty sure if I was playing in a harder mode, that wouldn't have happened, but. That's definitely something to watch out for, knowing when to use your items, knowing when to use your magic. It's definitely an interesting thing that sort of gives the game a roguelike kind of feel. But again, really enjoying it. I don't know where the plot will go from here. My brother is playing the game too, and he's like 20 hours ahead of me, and then he told me never to look at his screen because something that crazy happened. And I'm looking forward to when I eventually get there. So.
Oh, there's a lot of crazy shit that happens on the second half of this game. Trust
Awesome.
me. You're at the island right now. You're about to encounter one of them.
Oh yeah, I mean like the cool thing about this dragon tower or dragon temple, whatever you call it, and I don't even know if it's a cool thing. This dungeon is huge,
Oh,
like
it's
my
huge in your
strategy.
group. Well, it is huge, and there's a reason. You're gonna find out why.
Yeah, like I'm exploring this whole thing, finding all these items that go ahead and talk about the lore. At the same time, it's like I'm opening chests and crossing my fingers that they're not mimics because the mimics in this game are really strong. So yeah, it's definitely a good time, but I've definitely had my points where I've yelled at the game. So
I'll tell you this much about as far as like side quests and stuff like that is concerned. Just to if it'll ease your mind a little bit, when you get to the very last like dungeon in this game before you get to the final boss, the game gives you a month's amount of in-game time to finish up anything you want to do before you go there.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, the
Okay.
full 30 days of in-game time to
Yeah,
get
like
all that stuff taken care of.
a lot of the reviews I've heard from other publications mention that, they come in this thinking it's like Persona where they have to maximize the amount of time per day. And I definitely have that same sentiment, but they also said that they were able to maximize the royal orders and maximize all their social links. So that's definitely encouraging. At the same time, it's like, it's hard to take myself out of the mindset where I need to beat this dungeon today or else it's a waste of a day. So, yeah.
Yeah, don't worry. You can go all those dungeons you can go back to like later on. It's a lot of that stuff, unless the game tells you explicitly that there's a deadline to it, then you can go back pretty much any point later on in the game.
Oh
But
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, and like the frustration of going through that is pretty funny, especially after having gone through the third one where you pretty much have to speed run all the bosses because they have to like lose within 3 turns for you to move forward. I had like the worst time with the last one just because like it didn't seem like my guys were buff enough, but it turned out like I was overleveled. It's just that I was using the wrong kind of strategy. And like there are times where you have to really decide like should I go for the big kill now or should I heal? And like, if you heal, all of a sudden you run out of turns because you aren't paying attention. And yeah, like it's really cool seeing the different kinds of ways that the developers really just wanted to give you a certain agency, but at the same time, like peer you towards a direction where you should do it this way, that way it'll be faster for you. And yeah, having a lot of fun with that. But yeah, that's
Are
been
you
about it.
also enjoying the social commentary that the game has given you?
Oh my gosh, like
Because for a JRPG, it is shockingly mature
it
in
is shockingly mature, and like, you know, we've played Trails. Those games are super political, but this game is probably one of the most political games I've ever played in my life. And
And it's
like,
not just political, it is openly and shamelessly political. And
absolutely. And then like seeing all the discourse happening with Dragon Age right now, I'm like, if Metaphor wins Game of the Year, this is easily like the most political game that's ever going to win it. So it's insane. So
like the part of the major, like when you like if you remember in a Persona game, there are like certain social aspects you have to maximize when you're playing the game, your courage,
yes.
your stuff like that. One of them in this game is literally tolerance.
Oh yeah.
Literally. Like it's
Yeah.
so, the game is making its message very clear.
Absolutely. I also like that if you're looking at the map and like you see where you can go ahead and raise certain stats, whether it's the royal orders or whether it's your social links. I do like that, the shape of the heart will tell you what exactly you're raising so that you aren't wasting your time reading dialogue that'll show what's going to end up being better. But yeah, that's been about it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And being a new month, we have some new PlayStation Plus monthly games for Essential subscribers. Three new games here. Let's see, first up for PS5 and PS4, Hot Wheels Unleashed 2 Turbocharged. So you can check out the sequel. To a game that is well regarded. It's a pretty good arcade racing game for that.
And
So yeah.
honestly, and to be honest, in the modern era, there's honestly a shocking dearth of those types of games. Just
Yeah.
fun, dumb arcade stuff. That's part of the reason why I loved, what was it? I can't believe it, if it was last year or the year before that. It was Cruisin' or whatever it was called. Yeah, that was
Oh
ended up
yeah.
being one of my games of the year, even though it was incredibly stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. You can check that out. Let's see, for PS5, Ghostwire Tokyo. A little late on the getting the spooky game in there, but it's still a pretty good game there.
Yeah, it is. It's actually very solid.
As a good first person action game, where you're using sort of different arsenals of abilities to shoot at these enemies, almost like your typical like anime conjuring, abilities, and like Naruto kind of stuff, but using those as like replacements for guns essentially. For that kind of game is pretty cool. So there's that. And then the last one here for PS5 and PS4 is Death Note Killer Within. This is a new release, and this is an interesting use of the Death Note license for what is essentially a social deduction game. I believe you are, yeah, split into two teams of five people, for 10 total. One is on the side of Kira, and the other is on the side of L, investigators. And so, yeah, the two different teams are kind of working between each other to either investigate or try and hide the tracks of who they are, what they're working towards, all that kind of stuff. But it's an interesting idea for a game. I don't know that we've had much in the way of Death Note games. I think there was some word of a game being called this, and people were assuming it was a visual novel. So it being sort of an Among Us type of thing was a bit of a surprise for people. But yeah, that'll be interesting to check out. So yeah, that'll be available here on the 5th. So yeah, pretty decent lineup there for this month. Be able to check out. So yeah, there you go.
All right.
Let's see. Yeah, for Nintendo Switch Online subscribers, you got some stuff. On mobile, there's Nintendo Music.
Nintendo has finally decided to make their music available to people.
Yeah.
Besides those that essentially rip it and put it up on YouTube or elsewhere yeah. on the internet. And what they have done here is essentially find a way to create a service where they're going to drip feed you more music.
Yep.
Because I've loaded it up and like downloaded most of it. There's like 25 soundtracks on here, which is very small for what they have available to themselves. Let's see. There's 9 Switch games. Covers a decent swath there. You got like Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Super Mario Odyssey, Kirby Star Allies, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Splatoon 3, Pokemon Scarlet and Pokemon Violet, Pikmin 4, and they just added Super Mario Brothers Wonder, I think, on Friday. But every other platform they have is 2 games at max.
Yep.
For the Wii, technically it's only 1 game, Super Mario Galaxy. Then they added all the Wii menu music. So if you enjoy the like the Mii Plaza or the Wii Shop music, you can certainly listen to that. And the cool thing is they have options to just like keep playing it for, you know, 30 minutes or 60 minutes or whatever song you're listening to for that kind of stuff. And for DS, there's Tomodachi Collection and Nintendogs. Tomodachi Collection was not localized, so that's a neat choice. For GameCube, it's just Metroid Prime, Game Boy Advance's Fire Emblem, The Blazing Blade. For 64, it's The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time and Star Fox 64. Super Nintendo is Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island, and Donkey Kong Country. Game Boy is Kirby's Dream Land and Dr. Mario. And for the NES, they have Metroid, both the NES version and the Famicom Disk System version, and Super Mario Brothers. And that's it. Which is not enough, I would say. I would suggest like maybe they should have had at least twice as much music on here, because they have tons of games that they can pull from for this, and you'd be drip feeding it for the fact that you're not paying a monthly fee for this. You're paying a yearly fee for Nintendo Switch Online, and this is like a bonus thing. They seem to be just treating it like they're you know, NES and Game Boy and 64 apps and all that. They got some of the core stuff, but they'll drip feed the rest as they go to keep you subscribing. And so, yeah, there's, I don't believe there's a PC version of this service, and I assume that's because they want to make it as hard as possible to rip the songs.
Yeah, probably.
So I imagine it's still pretty easy, at least on Android, to get the songs out of there, but there you go. Pretty decent service, but yeah. You need a subscription for Nintendo Switch Online to X or to use it. And that's some money left on the table. Maybe people find a way to do that, but I think you have to have a physical Nintendo Switch attached to your account to get it. But I don't know. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely weird from Nintendo, but you know, as you mentioned, the app is actually pretty well made. Aside from the way it's organized, there's also like different ways to set up different kinds of playlists for various situations. You know, I listened to it for a bit, and I enjoyed what I listened to. Like, a lot of my favorites are in there: Star Fox, you know, a lot of the more modern Mario music, because I absolutely love the music for Mario Wonder, as well as Super Mario Odyssey. So like, that's definitely cool to see. Zelda is actually well represented, even though they don't have Tears of the Kingdom in there. But yeah, like, is it weird? Yes. At the same time, like, it's value added for NSO, which is like really hard to complain about. And I know that the drip feed thing is definitely weird, but at the same time, and yeah, we do know that Nintendo has a lot of IP, and they have a lot of different soundtracks to listen to. What they have right now on there is a lot. There is no way to actually listen to everything when it was released up till now, and you know, at least you know that it's going to continue. I'm not defending this methodology in any way, but like, when I think about it, like, for example, you know, when the NES Classic or the SNES Classic mini consoles came out, you know, they had a finite amount of games. And what did a lot of people do? They hacked them so they can put every game on it. When you do that, it's like, and, you know, I'm someone that's done that also. Am I actually going to have time to play everything? No. But at the same time, like, I know that they're there, and that's pretty cool to see. And, like, yeah, should Nintendo have put it all on Spotify? Probably. But at the same time, like, you know, they march to the beat of their own drum, and it's definitely weird to see. But at the same time, it's like, I'm glad that there is a place where I can listen to official Nintendo music. Yes, you can do that on YouTube, too. And, you know, maybe you own the CDs that they've released in Nintendo Power. But for the most part, like, they don't sell a lot of this stuff in America anymore. And, it's pretty cool to see that way. The one thing that's disappointing, and I know it's a matter of, like, you know, cultural differences, is the fact that none of the composers or writers for any of these songs are credited in any of the songs here. So Koji Kondo, whoever it may be, their name isn't mentioned. It's just by game, and that's pretty disappointing. It's a direction that I don't understand that Nintendo has done for the past, like, year and a half, where it's like the games, right? Like, we don't know who developed what Nintendo game until the game comes out. And you wonder why they do that, and, you know, it's just weird. But yeah, at the end of the day, like, you know, a lot of what's been composed for Nintendo has been Koji Kondo, so it's like people know already. But at the same time, it's like, if I was an up-and-comer in any sort of industry, I would like my credit somehow, and you would have liked to see it for something like this too.
Yeah, they absolutely should have all the composers and writers of the songs and even performers listed on this stuff. I also wouldn't maybe say it's the a well-made app, because I can get it to crash pretty easily. If the app is sitting in the background for long enough, I don't know what the time frame may be, but I go to load it up and try to play something, it'll crash instantly. I have to reload the app and redo what I was doing. Also, like, getting songs to download, I'm just trying to download all the songs for each game, is a pain in the butt. You have to click on the game, go under, go down a bit to the all tracks listing, and then go on there and click download. I was having issues doing that, because if it crashes like the way I was getting it to do, then the downloads are all in weird states where I have to go back and then reinitialize the download because it doesn't acknowledge that it's been downloaded, and there's issues with that stuff. I'm sure they'll fix it at some point, but yeah, it's like, this is a rough around the edge. You should just be able to download it from the listing screen, all the games. But yeah, they try to, I think, filter out the ancillary tracks of, like, just jingles and that kind of stuff. With the different listing, it's like top tracks. It's like, top tracks for what? Ones people are most listening to? What is this? It doesn't really explain any of that. But yeah, it could do better of, like, explaining, like, what the game is, what platforms it's on. It's obviously has that to a degree. But I feel like it should mention where you can access those games, especially for the stuff that's been remastered and whatnot. But yeah, for first attempt, it's pretty decent. Hopefully they keep working on it. So I would see what sort of cadence they have for those updates. But yeah, there you go for that. The other Nintendo Switch Online edition is that they added two new games to the Nintendo 64 Mature 17 Plus app. Turok 2, Seeds of Evil, and a Shadow Man. If you are a fan of Acclaim games, I guess, on the N64, and two games that have already been remastered elsewhere, so ones you do not necessarily have to play this way, but you can, I guess, if you need backup options that require you to keep paying every year or every month to access, but there you go.
Yeah, these games did not age well, but if you want to play them, be my guest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the N64 was probably not the way to play Shadow Man. I assume the current remaster is a lot better for that, and Turok 2 is just like, it's more Turok. If you could enjoy the first one, you'll probably enjoy this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, not really games that get people excited unless the N64 was all you had for all of your game needs for many years. So there you go. And then to continue the subscription fun on the Game Pass side, we found out that Metal Slug Tactics is going to be on Game Pass, Game Pass Ultimate, and PC Game Pass at launch. That'll be November 5th, so that's on this Tuesday. So you'll be able to check that out. Otherwise, it is $24.99 for the game. So, yeah, that's at least a more interesting way to check it out. Yeah, so there you go for that stuff. It's your subscription news of the week.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see here. Nintendo had some more news. We knew Animal Crossing Pocket Camp was going to be shut down at some point, and they were working on another version of for people to be able to continue playing it. This has been announced as Animal Crossing Pocket Camp Complete for iOS and Android. It'll be out December 3rd. It'll have a special price of $9.99 until January 31st, 2025. And then it'll be $19.99, one of the more expensive mobile games out there. Yeah, it seems like essentially they'll keep working on this game for about another year or so, and then that'll be as much of the content they'll be making for that game. You can import your save from the free-to-play version at least until June 2nd, 2025. So there you go for that. And I believe they are taking out I think some of the ticket stuff, the currency stuff. That is, yeah, I'm trying to see if they mentioned. Yeah, I don't know where that's at. But yeah, there's like some aspects of this, maybe like online features that will not be working so much, but they'll still have all the seasonal events and the other villagers to hang out with and a bunch of items to keep using and doing stuff with. So yeah. It seems like it'll be a solid version of the game. Gonna keep playing, but yeah, there you go.
All right.
Let's see, for other things happening in December, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Rita's Rewind is finally going to be out December 10th. That seems like that'll be on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC for $34.99. Pretty expensive, but looks like the pre-order discounts for 15% off, so you can get that for a little bit cheaper there. And yeah, that looks pretty solid. It's being made by Digital Eclipse and very much looks like it has a lot of the elements of your typical Super Nintendo side-scrolling beat-em-up. And yeah, hopefully it'd be one of the better Mighty Morphin Power Ranger games. There were lots and some of those weren't that great.
Yeah.
When this one was announced at the Game Awards, it definitely got a pop. Not the Game Awards, but Summer Game Fest. It definitely got a pop. It definitely got one from me. And yeah, this is definitely something that I look forward to playing. It is disappointing that they chose to come out with it in December before Christmas and after Thanksgiving, because you're pretty much sending a game out to die. I don't care how good you end up being, and that is a rough time to release, especially if it's like digital. So, and like, because like during this time, we see a lot of sales. Like the Game Awards is going to be that week. And yeah, we're going to see some sales there, and that's probably going to eat up on whatever Power Rangers can do. But yeah, again, I look forward to it. I was away from my desk from the last story. I just wanted to like point out that I think it's pretty cool that Nintendo went ahead and just made the Animal Crossing Pocket Camp Complete. Like, I'm not someone that plays any of that anymore, but I know plenty of people that do. And it's, you know, as someone that's worked in mobile, you know, we see too many times that when you sunset a game, it's gone. And the main thing with mobile, especially with games that are live service games, there's no way to really like bring them back in any sort of like way to make them playable, and like that's unfortunate, especially for game preservation. And for once, Nintendo has an actual win here. And you know, $10 is not bad. It eventually raises to 20, but at that point, like if you want it or if you play it, you already know about this, and you'll go ahead and go from there. And, you know, especially knowing when the season passes for mobile games easily dwarf $9 and $19, it's definitely cool to see Nintendo do this, because servers to keep games up, especially in mobile, are not cheap. And at the same time, it's like another thing that isn't cheap is the labor. So, you know, that's one reason why they had to like somewhat sunset it, but it's good to see that they didn't completely sunset it. So rare win there.
Yeah. So yeah. Some good stuff to look forward to throughout the rest of this year. But see, oh yeah, the early next year, we're going to be getting a nice little RPG from the East series, East Memoir, The Oath in Fel'Ghana. This is a remastered version of the PSP game, which itself was a remake of East 3, Wanderers. This was a well-regarded game on the PSP. It looks like they're doing some good work here to make it look real nice. And improving the soundtrack and all that to it, so that's cool.
Yeah, this one came as a surprise. We did know about the game, but as far as I know, like, it was supposed to come out in April. So seeing them come out in January is definitely a good move, especially considering it'll beat like a lot of the other RPGs coming out. At the same time, like, this is just it's not really a remaster, because the game already looked like this. I think it's just a matter of like a new translation, because what's it called? Xseed is handling it from the ground up. So that's definitely exciting to see. And it's been a while since we've seen an East game specifically out of them. And Oath in Fel'Ghana is regarded as like one of the better East games in the entire series. So I'm definitely looking forward to jumping into that one, especially knowing that I didn't play it. So I'm going to go into this with virgin eyes, and I look forward to going through it. And like, I did play the Switch version at Anime Expo. Really enjoyed what I played, but also it was really hard. So I'm wondering how the difficulty is with it.
Yeah. So yeah, let's see. They're adding difficulty options and quality of life enhancements, like a turbo mode. So they're doing some of that good stuff there. They have all new refined character illustrations throughout the games, but they also have an option for the classic art for that stuff. They've also done new voice acting for Adol Kristen. In case you need to hear him, so you can do that. And then, yeah, adding some three different iterations of the soundtrack, the original, the PC 8801 version, and the X68000, all remastered. So, get a lot of nice music there for that. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I just watched the trailer now, and like the voice acting definitely sounds nice. It's better than what Trails to Azure had, but it didn't have any. It was all Japanese, so it's good to see the effort being put in here.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the nicer PSP RPGs getting a new life.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of RPGs getting a new life, one of the biggest remaining Wii U releases, Xenoblade Chronicles X, is getting a definitive edition on the Switch. It'll be out March 20th. For $59.99. Yeah, it seems like they'll be enhancing visuals, adding some new story stuff, and some other things to the game. So yeah, now you'll finally have all of the Xenoblade Chronicles games on one platform, just before it gets replaced by a new one.
Yeah, Xenoblade is one of the blind spots in my RPG foray. I've played all versions of the original game so many times up to a certain point, and once I get to that certain point, like, I just stop playing, and that's pretty much made me ignore the rest despite owning them all. But you know, this is definitely a cool win for Nintendo. Like, now the entire series is available on the Switch in the best way you can play it. And you know, I think Brandon's played them all, and the coolest thing about the Xenoblade series, in my opinion, is the fact that they all run extremely well. They all look great, and they all look great. It's like, you wonder why Nintendo Studios themselves struggle to go ahead and put out a content on their actual platform, whereas Monolith Soft seems to have no problem at all. And they're also helping out with other games. Like, they helped out with Breath of the Wild. They helped out with Tears of the Kingdom. Both those games run great. And it's like, okay, why can't they work on Pokemon? I don't know.
Yeah. I think the neat one about this one is you have kind of a customizable mech that you ride around in for the big, like, open world stuff, which I don't think is as much of a thing in the other games.
Mm-hmm.
I think they more focus on fast travel kind of stuff.
My brother, he loves the series, but he actually hates this game. One mm-hmm. reason being he just said like the mech was a little bit archaic, not to mention the fact that until they showed the trailer for this new one, it's kind of disconnected, not really part of the world, but I guess is in some way. And I have no idea what the end of the reveal trailer showed, but I would guess it's a way that bridges the three games together. But
possibly,
yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, one of the screenshots they have here is just a cat under a table.
Yeah, there's a cat.
Another one of these seems to have the motion blur on, and mm-hmm. it's a bad screenshot. It should not put this in here. it looks very bad in a way. It's like, did nobody else look at this one? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. That'll be out in a few months, so you can check that one out.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of games coming out next year, we finally have at least a time frame for when Glover will finally be returning to the console. This is for the PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch versions. Mm-hmm. They'll be out in 2025. I was surprised this hadn't already happened because the Steam version was in 2022. And then I also reminded myself that was on 420.
Mm.
So I assume they will release it on 420 in 2025, but it should not have taken 3 years for that.
Yeah.
For that game. It's not that good to be worth the wait, but
mm.
finally people can get in on the joke. So there you go. Yeah. And then we got some good news here for Brandon. He's got new chapters of Deltarune coming. 3 and 4
yep. are
supposed to be out next year.
Uh-huh.
No specific date, just 2025, mm-hmm. whenever they're done. Toby Fox knows the joke of how long it takes them to get this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
It says here, I'm very eager to show you what we've made since 6 years ago. Mm. Chapters 3 and 4 will 100% come out in 2025. Mm-hmm. The time is still relying on localization and console porting. Please hear me clawing at the door, trying to escape the shallow coffin I have been buried in.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Yeah, it's been 6 years since Chapter 1 released.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2 came out a year or two later. But he's pledged 3, 4, and 5
mm-hmm.
Will be happening, and I guess these will potentially be paid releases
mm.
whenever they come out. So
yeah,
that'll be something. He'll be releasing a PS4 game in 2025, so
mm-hmm.
good luck to him. So yeah, there you go.
Yep, definitely cool to see. I loved Undertale. Deltarune, I haven't played Chapter 1. Or no, I've played Chapter 1, I'm just not finished with it. It's longer than I thought it would be. Like, I thought I would be able to finish it during a flight, and I didn't do that, so I don't know how much longer I have. And I heard Chapter 2 is just a little bit longer, but yeah. Considering Brandon's excited, like I have this to ask of you. When you get to the end of these chapters, do they actually feel like endings, or do you have like a bad not really a bad, but do you have a cliffhanger moving on to the next one?
You know how when you're like watching a TV show and like you get to like a season finale?
Yeah.
It feels like that.
Okay.
There's a lot happens in every chapter, but it does always sort of end with like a taste of what, you know, where the plot's going to be moving forward.
Okay. And do you think it'll end at 4, or is it just, all right, 3 and 4?
It's actually supposed to be, there's supposed to actually be 5 chapters in total. Okay. So no, it will not end on 4.
That's cool. All right. But I know that you end up, you got to pay for 3 and 4, but I'm assuming that, you know, it's not going to be a big deal, especially since 1 and 2 are free. So
yeah, 1 and 2 are 100% free. So
Yeah, they were essentially released as demos.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the way that they're categorized. But yeah, that'll happen at some point next year.
Yep.
Then maybe it doesn't. It becomes like the Hollow Knight Silk Song deal thing. Mm. So.
Toby Fox doesn't really have that kind of reputation.
Yeah, but he's still got the people that are obsessed with the thing, so. But yeah, let's see. Next up here, Ubisoft finally put out a new game.
Yep.
But it's their first crypto game.
Yeah.
With a set of NFTs. It is a turn-based tactical RPG.
Of course.
a PvP one. So
yep,
it has a marketplace of NFT characters you can buy, and ranges mm-hmm. from, let's see, from about $5 to $200 for most of them. But some seem to have a very high price, like $63,000 or about mm-hmm. 1.9 million gold in game.
Mm-hmm.
And that fluctuates obviously as the market goes, but yeah, that is a very expensive game. And because it's an NFT game, a crypto game, it is only available on the Ubisoft mm-hmm. launcher. It's not on Steam. I don't know if it's on Epic. Epic has that stuff, but I don't check it that often. But yeah, this
mm-hmm.
seems like an interesting idea for a game, just the PvP tactical RPG, but the part where you gotta pay for characters mm-hmm. as NFTs is the part where I think most people will check out. So I think they're hoping that they get some crypto whales to
mm-hmm.
jump into the game. We'll see, but yeah. Definitely like, oh, neat, but also, ew.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're coming out at a point where it's like, this is a little late for what that market was interested in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to Ubisoft.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And the freaking thing, I mean, even the image provided even looks like it was made using AI, even though I'm pretty sure it wasn't. But it just looks that generic.
Yeah. And yeah, if you're wondering what the title of this thing is, it's Champions Tactics Grimoria mm. Chronicles, which is a very
This has nothing to do with Champions of Norrath, right?
I doubt it.
I didn't think so. Yeah, don't care.
No, it's about their champions, mm-hmm. the crypto champions. So there you go. Let's get to some disappointing news. We kind of knew this was probably where this was going, but Sony has announced that they will be closing Concord developer Firewalk Studios,
mm-hmm.
as well as mobile developer Neon Koi, who you probably don't really know much about because I believe when they were acquired, they had a different name.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what that name was, but they rebranded as Neon Koi, and were in the process of working on a mobile action game that seemed like it just did not pan out.
Yeah.
And also ended up getting laid off as well. Unfortunately, I believe they are letting the people on these teams apply for positions within global PlayStation Studios spots. So hopefully they do get a second chance at working at PlayStation. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, otherwise it's just very sad news because, yeah, Concord was a very cool game that just did not find an audience at mm-hmm. all. And yeah, I imagine they took some time to look at options for either reworking the game for a free-to-play launch or whatever.
Yeah.
Or whatever next project they could potentially be working on. But mm-hmm. I imagine the amount of work that would go into that was probably such an extraordinary cost on top of what had been essentially failed with this game, wasted on this game, that it probably wasn't worth it for trying to work back out of the hole they were in.
Mm-hmm.
At least that seems like the reason they would end up closing them, unfortunately, and sad state of affairs there. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
yeah, it's definitely on the rough side. It's both surprising and not surprising. It's not surprising considering, like, you know, obviously the state of the industry. Mm-hmm. It is surprising just seeing, like, you know, the way it happened. Like, it's no secret that PlayStation wants to focus on live service titles. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they're too late. You know. they definitely have a flash in the pan with Helldivers, but you can't expect everything to be Helldivers. And like, that game was prepared to be where it is, and it's definitely had like some rough spots, but at the end of the day, like, the people playing that game enjoy it because it's a good game and it's mm-hmm. well run. And you know what? Concord was good. From what I the game that I played was definitely pretty cool. It had nice balance. The community wasn't like terrible. I had a lot of fun with it. Unfortunately, like, you know, the return on investment wasn't there. But the reason why it's surprising was because the game didn't last 2 weeks. I talked about this before. Like, yeah, like you do expect games like this to be an immediate success. But while Concord was good, it didn't do anything to make me or to make people want to leave Overwatch. It didn't do anything to make people want to leave Valorant. It didn't do anything to make people want to leave, you know, whatever else is there. And like that's the part that's the hard part. You got to be able to sell your product, and this one didn't do it all that well. And the hard part is they've put in so much money in here. Like they have like special edition controllers. They're going to be on an episode of what's it called, Secret Level on Amazon whenever that comes out, and no one will know what it's about because that game is like dead. And yeah, it's rough. And like the reason why it's a little bit surprising is because even though like Sony is investing in the wrong thing at the wrong time, you know, you look at games like No Man's Sky, Final Fantasy 14, Fallout 76. All of these games had rough launches too, but at the same time, like they had the buy-in from their publisher to just go ahead and work through these hard times and get through it. This game didn't stand a chance, and that sucks. Like, you're Sony, you're number one in the industry right now. Like, what are you doing? So, like, it's definitely hard to see. I don't know much about this mobile company, but yeah. And the rough thing here, especially with the way Herman Holst put it out in regards to like Sony being in a better place than they were in a few years, like, there is nothing positive about getting rid of jobs, dude. Like, we know you're better than this. We know how good you are considering what you did with the Gorilla. But like, there, you should not reflect anything positive from this news. There's nothing positive in it. And that's a shame.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. And we'll go for one more bummer news. The U.S. Copyright Office has rejected a DMCA exemption requested by the Video Game History Foundation to support remote access to out-of-print games for researchers. Yeah, citing here, let's see, that the VGHF did not propose a clear requirement to know who the users are or why they want access to a game. Saying proponents of video game preservation have not met their burden of showing that reproducing works to allow for multiple simultaneous use in the computer program class is likely to be fair. The Register, which is the group that runs the Copyright Office, the Register also finds that the proponents have not met their burden of showing that the proposed off-premises uses in the video game class are likely to be fair. Yeah, they also deemed that the VGHF, their stance on emulation was inconsistent and incomplete, and the technologies are not addressed in the exemption text. I believe they posted their own statement here. They claim that under current anti-circumvention rules in Section 1201 of the DMCA, these institutions, quote, are unable to break copy protection on games in order to make them remotely accessible to researchers. I believe part of this they cited Duck Hunt is like an example of this, because it is a game that particularly if you want to go to the original game, you need a CRT capable of playing it on. You need a Zapper, you need NES and a copy of the game. And at this point, the cost of that is quite exorbitant versus being able to emulate that in a way that works on modern screens, especially because there are some recently released versions of light gun shooters that work on LCDs and OLEDs and such. But yeah, the VGHF wrote here, the game industry's absolutist position, which the ESA's own members have declined to go on support, forces researchers to explore extra legal methods to access the vast majority of out-of-print video games that are otherwise unavailable. We will continue our advocacy for greater access and legal allowance for video game preservation and working with members of the video game industry to increase internal awareness around these issues. And yeah, not really surprised that the Copyright Office or the ESA would be against this kind of stuff. They seem to be just wholesale, you know, no for any kind of exemption on this kind of research and preservation end of things. So yeah, that is a disappointment there, but yeah, not surprising. So yeah, but yeah, I think that will end up doing it for this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and hopefully more positive stuff to talk about. We'll see as the holidays are fast approaching. We got some stuff coming out this week. As we mentioned, the Death Note game is out this week. Trying to see what else is coming out here for November. Okay, here we go. I think I'm in the right place. Yeah. Yeah, there's Death Note Killer Within, Metal Slug Tactics, Planet Coaster 2, TMNT Splintered Fate is coming to PC, that Broken Sword remaster, Empire of the Ants is coming out on consoles and PC, Goat Simulator remastered on the new consoles, there you go, Phantom Brave, the Bermuda Triangle remaster, there you go for that, that's a Mario and Luigi Brothership is out this week. Taiko no Tatsujin Rhythm Festival is also out this week on Xbox and PlayStation and PC. Slitterheads on the 8th. So there's some solid-looking games there for this week to check out. So, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, if you let friends and family know that they should check out the show and select strangers that are happy to see the temperature is finally starting to dip as we get into the holiday season here in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.